Welcome to Contagious Podcast, contagious conversations for automotive innovation. You are about to get part two of a conversation that I got to have with my man, Ben Hadley, and we get diving deep into change management as it relates to software and process. We also take a look at a little bit of like how software is almost outgrown what we're doing in the dealership and how it actually has started to inhibit us because of the multiple ways of communication that our customers are interacting with us and allowing our people to get back to a place of being able to serve our guests, create a great customer experience. I'm excited for you to hear what we got to talk about and enter the conversation. Don't want to hold it up too much because if you've just been listening to part one, we're going to get right to part two. Excited for you to hear. Again, here is Ben Hadley.
And so when we're talking about software or process or anything like that, it's a hard pill to swallow to adjust a process. But I think what you were really also asking is that, okay, so maybe I'm not trying to be a single point of contact dealer. I'm not trying to do all that.
Sure.
But I realize that there's some level of culture issue that can't, like, even if I wanted to, even if like I'm a dealer principal, I just caught wind of some incredible people. Maybe I'm on this podcast listening and I'm going, wow, that's the future or that's the now. I have to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at your sales staff going, oh boy. Right.
Right.
or your service staff going, okay, step back. I mean, you said it right there. One-on-one coaching. Invite them to the podcast, get them on LinkedIn, get them on social, have monthly meetings, change the culture. Instead of sitting in your office, go down to the sales meeting or the service meeting. And if you're being affected by something, like, let it affect the culture of the whole thing.
I think it's like change management, right? There's change management, but then there's like automotive change management and, you know, like back to the start of this conversation, which was like, okay, we have this marketing thing, you know, we knew we were behind and then we outsourced a bunch of it. Okay. Well, why'd you outsource it? Why didn't someone at the dealership learn how to write SEO? Why didn't someone at the dealership learn how to manage their paid search? Why didn't someone at the dealership learn how to write HTML, JavaScript, blah, 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 right? Well, you know, there's some scale factors there. Like, it makes sense to have, but if you're not trying to nitpick that point, if you're looking at the general point I'm trying to make, it was easier for most dealers to not have to own the change management, to find someone external and say, you know what?
Get on a monthly call.
Dude, you know how many people probably started with the best intentions of buying something like chat? They're like, yeah, obviously. People like to chat. They're chatting on my website. I can see that. I should buy a chat product. They buy that chat product. And then probably 7 out of 10 times, I'd say, if not a little bit more, they're like, wait, why are all these chats going unanswered? And then like 3 months later, they're calling up that provider. They're like, we love your tool. Here's the thing. We'd actually like you to use the tool. What? Yeah. We want you to manage our chats. Okay, cool. Right? Like, sure. And so you have the other chat, you know, you outsource that and you say, you know what? Someone else represent the dealership, blah, 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 blah. But in that 3 months, not a lot of dealers are going, you know what? This is the future of communication. We need to own this. Why have someone else own it and mess it up or be out of it? You know, like for such a control freaky industry where there's so many type A type personalities, it's kind of crazy if you think about it, that we've let this much control of our dealership go outside the actual store. Wow. And so, so what we're talking about isn't just like, you know, hey, how do I get any general dealer to like to like do change management, it's actually almost a mentality difference. It's like an emotional charge difference. It's like, hey, no. I want to own all of it. Huh. All of it, right? And if I can't, because of scale issues, if I can't develop the tech, if I can't, dude, shout out to, you know what dealer group I'd shout out right now? DGDG, DGDG.com, check them out. Nathan Hollenbach over there, they have developers on staff.
Yeah. They don't mess
around. Ridiculous. They don't mess around. But where are they? They're right outside Silicon Valley. So who is their customer, right? Their customer is our customer in the future. Like, if you think about it, anybody that's living right in Silicon Valley is expecting a lot because they're tech progressive people. They're super, super nerdy, right? They're super intelligent. So they're not into this idea of like getting hosed or having the long drawn out transactions and negotiating forever. They're like, dude, I could write a script that can go comb Google and find the best deal. So just give me the best deal, right? That's your clientele. So how are you going to react? You could A, outsource it to some other company, B, own the heck out of it, right? Or sell the whole thing, C. And what do? They go, B, no, we're going to own as much of this freaking pie as possible. And don't even really think of us as an automotive. Think of us as a tech company too. Like, you almost put those guys in a tech sphere because of how much stuff they make themselves.
No doubt. Well, and we're seeing auto groups like go after this that are actually like, they're owning the tech. And then they're like, oh, wow, this worked really, really well for us. It might work better for some other people too.
Totally.
And totally. I think that you're going to see more of that. I mean, I agree. I mean, you think about like, okay, I'm going to point to it, right? But Tesla.
Yeah.
Tesla is a tech company that just happens to sell cars.
Yep. Dude, layup, easy one. Totally. Right? Like, that's like,
I'm posting like, that. You can't take that one. I'm owning that. Tesla's a tech company that just happens to sell cars.
100%.
You know, 100%. It's like, I mean, you know, if you've ever seen the very first Simon Sinek, his TED talk that like has been viewed a billion times.
Why?
Yeah, like start with why. But he says in the very first one, he's like, Apple is a is like, I can't remember. Apple is a computer company that just happens to sell MP3 players, right? Or something like that. And this was back in 2009. So I know nobody on the call that's younger than 23 is like, what's an MP3 player? You know, but yeah, I think that there is going to be an element of that. I said this, I said the current CMO, so chief marketing officer, is the new CEO, COO of the future in automotive. Because from a marketing perspective, there's an understanding level. And typically in automotive, like the marketing person is also the tech stack guy or gal. And so that person is going to start to be like, oh, no. Operationally, we have to adjust. We have to shift. We have to adjust our tech stack. And then we have to adjust our, So we're going to help you adjust the processes so that we can help you adjust your tech stack. And then people are going to be like, oh, you're the COO, you know, you're not the market.
I think CTO, right? Like,
yeah,
I think
CTO,
there's a missing position in auto, which is like an individual that has a holistic idea of tech stacks working together in orchestration to provide some sort of outcome. And I think, you know, just like what I always find interesting is parallels between the vendor side and the automotive side. So if you like looked at the same kind of problem is getting solved in the same way in the vendor side, the tech side, where you see more and more CTOs becoming CEOs because the advantage that tech brought is kind of like, okay, like let's give this guy the reins because we kind of understand that the future is going to be kind of in that lane too. Now flip it and look at this one. I think this one's really interesting. If I'm an automotive dealership, I'm in the dealer world. And
which, to be fair, just so everyone knows, he didn't tell his origin story, but like he started there. He's been there. He's not just the vendor side. Yeah. Like he gets both sides of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. You have to say that. That's a, oh man, You're right. We could go for an hour. So on the dealer side, right, you're looking at your tech stacks. You're looking at your customer acquisition. You're looking at, like, how do I conquer this market near me? How do I, like, expand? That's kind of been the playbook. Imagine your tech companies that you've bought from thinking the same way. So you're a tech company and you come into the market, you've got a new website or something, and you sell to new car dealers. So let's ignore independents for just a second. Your total addressable market is like, what, 17,500 dealers, something like that, right? 18,000 dealers. That's the max you can sell to. The max. So when the market size is super limited, and when the recurrence of revenue is so important to get a great multiple, get a great valuation,
right?
All of these guys run the same playbook on the tech side, which is try to get a decent amount of them, but never let a single one cancel.
Go. Yep.
Ever. We will retain every single one forever. What's interesting to me
Sound up, y'all. It's about to get dropped.
Right. If we could get the dealerships in the country to adopt the same exact practices, right? So instead of saying, how can I get more out of state, get this guy to drive 5 hours, you know, expand. Imagine a world where you just said, I want 10,000 customers. That's it. But I want every single one of them to come back every single time they need another car.
Yes.
You'd actually start valuing that business differently. Just objectively, if you're, you know, in a buy sell scenario, you definitely would value that business completely differently than your competitor that constantly has to go out and seek. But if that was the type of change that we saw, like top down, OEMs to dealers, but start it with the dealers too. So it's actually, let's go from both sides in. I think you would radically change pricing in this industry. I think you'd radically change marketing in this industry. I think you'd radically change how people think about the customer experience, the user experience, the tool sets they buy, just by thinking about, okay, what is the audience that I really, really just want to own? Outright own, just own. Right.
But here's the thing. Net new after that will be a result of the attention to it. So you will attract net new out of your attention to not going.
Let's not even get there though. You know what I mean? Let's not even get there. Because what we have instead, like, that's totally great problem to have. What we have instead is, dude, I got $7,500 on that guy.
Yeah.
Is that guy ever coming back?
Not a chance.
You have a lifetime customer, you know? Hopefully you made enough on that one transaction
to make it
To make it worth it so that customer, when they're like, F that, I'm not coming back, that you don't have to worry about it. Maybe there's a number there, but that's not a strategy. That's not a long-term game. If you're trying to do this for the next 100 years, like, no, dude, sell that guy a car and then another car and then
service it and sell it.
Rinse and repeat. That's it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we have a non-loyal customer base. I mean, even the people that are like, we have the most loyal customer base, it's still what, probably a 25-30%, you know, retention type database max. Yes.
I honestly, you know, I think this is the debate. Is it getting easier? Or is it getting harder? Like, cars are getting more and more similar, right? So I think you could argue.
Absolutely.
Right. That, like, when I drive and I see like an Avalon and then I see a Fusion and then I see like a Sonata and they all have the Aston Martin front, you know, because wind tunnels don't care. And we all had to like get the most aerodynamic vehicle to get our MPGs up. Like, circa 2008 on, right? Like all the cars started looking a lot alike. All the parts are bought from the same places, right? It's like every brand has a Takata airbag. And every time they those guys recall, it's like everybody's affected. So what is it? Where's the loyalty come from? Because it's not coming from the badge. It's not coming from the design of the car, right?
It's coming from.
And so you could either, you could have like a glass half full, glass half empty on thing on this question, which is it getting easier? I think it should be getting easier with the cars being more and more similar.
Huh.
Right. That would mean to me that if my dealership is radically a better experience, then I should be able to hold someone in on the, you know, Acura RDX versus the comparable Lexus, whatever.
Yeah.
Like I should be able to still own them.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. I don't know how the dealership world right now feels about that. I think they'd be saying, actually, it's getting harder.
Huh.
Like they'd be thinking, yeah, actually, because there's so much more choice, customers are now comparing, you know, more vehicles against each other. Which
I mean, there are some stats to that, right? The number of dealerships has increased by like 0.3 or something like that, the most recent Cox Automotive study. So I think there's an element to that, but it's probably because we've done a bad job with loyalty. It's not because the cars are doing that way. It's because we've done a poor job of
creating customers. That's what I'm feeling. I think it's a good debate though, because like, is there any reason, I always go back to this moment in my head where my sister-in-law was like, hey, can you help me buy a car? I was like, sure. And we were at this, we ended up at this Jeep dealer and she was buying a, I think it was a Cherokee, not the Grand Cherokee. It was just the regular Cherokee. And the guy comes out, she was leasing. The guy comes out and he's like, you know, whatever, giving her lease residual rate, whatever. And she whips out another quote she had gotten from a Honda dealer for a CRV. And she was like, well, why are these different? Like what dawned on me in that moment was in her head, because it was like, why are you asking? They're obviously different cars. Of course, they're going to be different is in my head, right?
Yeah.
Trying to be empathetic and think through her head, I realized like, holy crap, she doesn't see a difference. She's looking at this going, what do you mean? The CRV, I think they look radically different. I think they're completely different brands. I think everything's
different about them.
But the impression that leaves on her is no, like these are both, you know, 5-passenger SUVs with comparable. They both have Apple CarPlay. They both have the 5.6-inch screen. They both, you know, there's nothing different.
Yeah.
It's what I imagine people more so on the Android side of things when they like get a Samsung and then they get an LG and they're just like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Look one, maybe the other. That to me is where her mind was at. And to me, if the dealer, the Jeep dealer ended up winning the deal and he won it in the best way, he said, look, I'll deliver that vehicle to you and drive it up because we're in New Hampshire and I'm in Vermont, obviously. I'll drive it up to you.
He sold experience, not a car payment.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, yep. You're not going to have to take a trip down. We'll take care of it. And this is the beauty. We'll like set the expectation. I will be at your house at 3:00 on Saturday, like paperwork done, everything done, delivery of car, right? All of those things buttoned up. Made it easy to see the experience difference. And I think that makes the world a difference.
Yeah, I think the customer and the employee both want it easy. So if I can bring it like full circle, right? Yeah. When, like I talk to people all the time, they go in, they walk in, they're at a new job. And they're like, man, they handed me a Mac, right? Or whatever, they handed me a computer.
Yep.
They showed me where my desk was. They gave me some tools, right? It's typically like Gmail, Slack, and like two other tools and then whatever their like primary tool are. They were all super easy. They trained me for a little while. Yep. Probably actually they trained me for a long while. It was like 4 weeks of training.
Yep. Which,
again, that we're doing that here, but like most people are like, 4 weeks of training, we got to get them on the floor.
Yeah. You know?
And it's like, okay, so that's what it means to enter into that environment as an employee. It's like, okay, when people, okay, I know you're going to shoot me, right? But when people come here to work as a salesperson, and if you're wanting to come here, like, don't get scared. 18 logins. Now, a lot of those are like single sign-on, come with like single sign-on type stuff, or like, they're just app things that automatically appear so you don't have to remember them. Yeah. And they're like synced within your day, but that's not easy. And so then they're looking at that tech stack going, this isn't easy. And they have to communicate an easy process to our customers. And the customers are going, wait, if you can't sense that it's easy, then I'm not sensing that it's easy. So how is this whole thing easy? Right. And to be fair, I think we've done a lot of things to, like, once people are in the sales funnel, it's this other stuff is ancillary that they don't really see is not a part of the process, but
they feel it, dude. I argue
sometimes they do. Yeah. I mean, shoot, we have a video platform and a text platform. So our customers get two phone numbers text. It's like, oh man, I hate it.
Like,
I'm trying to solve for it, but I, you know, again, I've got to go find someone that's able to accomplish that within our structure and our process, because there's some like non-negotiables within that. And I think there's some people that are solving for that in the industry, but it's still a brutal proposition for both the customer and the employee to be able to communicate and create an easy, fast, and efficient process to buy or service a car. So
literally, I think, if really the tech we've had has been meant to market to a customer and give the appearance that we are easy to buy from and give them shopping tools, right? And now if you know, I think we're in agreement, the future is helping salespeople sell. That's the new tech.
No doubt.
Then, you know, then if I'm sitting at a dealership, if I'm like logging into a bunch of different places, if I'm texting from a bunch of different numbers, like, that doesn't, you know what I mean? That doesn't make it. Imagine you're working like a dealership. Imagine you're working, you're buying a new CRM. You call up, call Vin Solutions, right? And you texted them. You get a salesperson, you text the guy, you start talking, whatever. And then all of a sudden, a strange different number texts you back, right? Or like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you get on a Zoom meeting and then halfway through the Zoom, he's like, no, let's jump on Hangouts, Google Hangouts. Or like,
right,
if you really pay attention back to like what I was saying about, if we started mimicking, right? If auto started mimicking the vendors they buy from, how big that would be. It doesn't just happen with, hey, what about like the revenue strategy? I think it also, think about the buying and the selling. Like when a tech company sells you your new tech, pay attention to how they're doing it. It's digital retailing before it was
follow-up at minimum.
The follow-up is insane, right? Yeah. They know there's only 18,000 of these customers available in the United States. So everyone is precious, right? Yeah. So the follow-up is not taken for granted, right? Compare that. It's like, we follow up with most of them. No. Like tech, it's all of them, right? Huh. But then think about, okay, how did you buy a CRM? How did you buy your website? How did you buy your digital retailing platform, ironically, right? You probably left a lead, met a guy, connected with the person, texted, emailed, whatever your preference was for communication, that salesperson on the vendor side adopted to. You like email? Cool, we're going to do email. You like phone calls? We'll do phone calls. Like Zooms every couple of weeks? We'll do Zoom every couple of weeks. Oh, you like texting? I'll do texting just randomly. After that, he probably got you into a negotiation mode. After that, he TO'd you over to, you know, his general manager, I mean, his boss or whatever.
Right.
Got the okay on the deal, sent you a contract digitally that you signed off on.
Hello.
Right.
Yes.
And that's the deal. And so you're like, this is what's crazy. Dealerships are spending thousands of dollars per month, every single month, and being participants in this new era type of buying and selling. Like, in other words, the process wasn't, oh, we need a new CRM. Cool. well, we're going to start you off with this one guy. He's going to do the inbound lead. And then he's going to answer it. And then he's going to pass you off over to this other guy. And then that guy's going to talk to you. But if he's out on Thursday, then some other guy's going to talk to you. And then he's going to pass you off to this new dude, the GSM, to build some credibility. And then after that, when you think you're done, we have this whole other side called the F&I side. We're going to kick you off over to there so you can get a protection plan on your website. Like, you know what I mean? Like think about how crazy, like smooth the pretty much smooth the process is on the vendor, automotive vendor side is compared to the buying process and selling.
Or any, I mean, any buying process.
Yes.
Any buying process.
Yeah, I know. But dude, I sometimes think that's, you know, I hate the Amazon comparison, or I hate the Target, or, you know, I use automotive software because you're spending like $2,000 on a CRM and it is easy. It's, you're like, that's $24,000 a year and it's easy. And I think we make these comparisons sometimes to like Amazon, and we're like, yo, Amazon, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but like $36 toilet paper roll and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is different. Right. I mean, like, I can make an impulse a buy on Amazon.
Yes. 100%. Right? Yeah.
But there's not many, many things that I can think of where I'm like, hey, in my life, I'm spending thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars a month on a thing personally, not speaking for the automotive world right now.
Right, right, right.
That wasn't like that. Like, I called someone, had an easy buying process. Like, there's no other thing that I'm buying regularly, right? That fits that criteria. The only thing I can think of is maybe for a business that I've represented, having to buy a CRM for that business, or having to buy sales enablement tools for that business, those type of things, right? Data. Really expensive purchases, but so fluid and so much easier than we've made a really expensive purchase like buying a car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, I'm gonna wrap this up because we've been going, and we'll get on this again.
Part two. We're gonna do a part two because
we're gonna do part two. But in a few weeks, you are going to want to, you're gonna want to, Ben, and then anyone else in the industry is gonna want to listen in on the podcast when we do talk to my man Tom Ryan, my man Colton Ray. Because you may have seen them, or you're going to see them in a bunch of different interviews over the next few weeks, but I think that they're looking, not just looking, they have solved a lot of that equation. I'm really excited about it. And ooh, I think there's some other people too, but I get the pleasure of having them on my podcast, so I get to talk about it. And to be fair, we're not even using them as in our tech stack right now. So, but yeah, I think it's coming in the automotive industry. It's going to attract a new and better generation of up and coming auto employees, people that we haven't even thought are going to be in the business, and it's going to attract more and more customers to do business with us. And I think if we do it right, we might actually begin to re-outpace some of these tech giants that are getting in automotive, because we have 100%. The one thing that they don't have: people. And that matters. So, man, thanks for being on. We'll do part two sometime soon. Do me a favor, let everyone know where they can find you, where they can communicate with you, what you're doing right now, and then we'll wrap it.
Okay. So you got dudewheresmydealership.com. You've got Twitter/Ben Hadley, and you've got, my LinkedIn, which is like Benjamin-Hadley with some random numbers. Just make sure that I'm a mutual friend. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And you found the right guy.
There you go. Connect with him, chat with him. He'll message back with you. It's been great getting to know Ben over the last few years. And yeah, looking forward to the next conversation. Thanks for being on, man.
Dude, thank you for having me, man.
I promise. At some point, we will have Ben on again, and we'll probably let him riff on a whole other subject. He's a guy that just has a lot of creative and innovative ideas, sees things from a different perspective. So I hope you were encouraged by that conversation. like I was. If you were encouraged and want to become a part of the conversation, shoot me a DM on LinkedIn, email me. I want to talk to more people about more things in automotive, pushing toward innovation. Also, if you're on an iPhone, grab your phone, download the Clubhouse app, get involved. Thursdays, 3 p.m. Central, we'll be on there inviting more people to the conversation, talking about this topic specifically, software, tech, training, how that is encompassed within the dealership. So thank you so much for watching or listening. Do us a favor, like us, subscribe, comment, share it with your friends. Make sure this conversation gets out there in the world. Create contagious conversations within your dealership, within your workplace. Allow more people to see that innovation is not just coming, but it's here within the automotive industry. And this is a platform that we want to express more of that more often, more people talking and not less. This has been Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. Thanks for listening.